that you're born an Italian. If you want your life to be great, see that you're born an Italiano and your life will be great.
Hey there, Paisani. Welcome back to your weekly dose of Italian-American history, heritage, and hilarity. Your favorite show that you know as the Italian-American Podcast. I'm John Viola, along with my partner in crime, the Italian-American Wikipedia himself, Mr. Patrick O'Boyle, and the Bella Bensonhurst, Miss Rosella Rago. I'm very excited about today's episode because it's one that I've had on the list of stuff I'd like to talk about really since the very beginning when the three of us came on the show. And Pat and I always throw around the phrase Lou Monte Italian to describe that very unique pigeon, if you will, that grew up and existed here from the turn of the 18th and 19th centuries into sort of the World War II era and beyond. This very unique Italian-American language that's a hybrid of a lot of southern regional languages and some English and standard Italian, and it's just sort of its own unique breed. And we've always wanted to kind of do a show dissecting that unique language that we use, that Lou Monte Italian, if you will. And we finally found the right person to come and talk about it. So I'm really excited to introduce today's guest. And not only is she a contemporary, a younger person who grew up in Italy, in Sicily, and studied languages, but really has a passion for our very unique Italian-American version of Italian. So Federica Latorre is from Altofonte, which is right outside of the city of Palermo, and she's known online as just a Siciliana. She's got an Instagram page where she shares her love of the Sicilian culture, the Italian-American culture and languages, and in 2016 she wrote her thesis on Italian-American language, and eventually became a volunteer translator at the Ellis Island Museum. So some really interesting projects to get to translate this unique stuff right from the heart of our immigration experience. So I'm very, very excited to welcome her on today. I know we have a lot of questions for her, and we're going to want to talk about the language. So Federica, welcome to the Italian-American Podcast. We're really happy to have you. And thank you for coming all the way from Sicily. You were volunteering at the Ellis Island Museum, so you were here for a while, correct?
Well, actually, I was there for 3 months in 2017, and I started volunteering online back when I was back to Sicily. So I met the person who is still in charge of this project, and I went to Ellis Island, actually. And I met him, and then I started volunteering, translating and transcribing these sketches from 1930s. By a very famous comedian back in the days from Palermo, who moved to the U.S.
So tell us, how did you get into, before we talk about the comedy and everything that kind of came out of this unique Italian-American experience, how did you find a passion for this Italian-American version of the Italian language? How did you stumble on it even?
Well, let me say that part of my family from my mother's side lives in the U.S. So I was always exposed to the Italian-American language since I was a child. And it was interesting for me because I didn't speak English back then. And I was like, what are they saying? Why does it sound like Italian, but it's not Italian? You know what I mean, right? Like, Italian-American is a language. Somebody says that it's a slang, but I would like to call it language. So I was exposed to it. And in 2016, I went to New York and I heard a person saying mapin. That's the Italian-American word for dishcloth. And in Sicilian, it's mapina. So that was funny for me. And I was like, why? So how do you, from mapina, that's a Sicilian word, an Italian person doesn't know what does it mean. Mappina, you call a dishcloth mappin.
I have an answer for that.
Yeah.
Because the language of New York is heavily Neapolitan because we were the dominant culture. Neapolitan has the schwa, oh, sound that we got from the Oscans.
Yeah.
So mappino, oh, with the E with the two dots is correct in Neapolitan.
Yeah.
So people who are not Neapolitan speakers from other parts of Italy come and do not understand that Neapolitan, because New Orleans is more Sicilian. So the language tends to trend Sicilian.
Yeah.
So they don't understand the underlying layers of foundational cultures, Southern Italian foundational cultures here, which would be Campania for New York and New Jersey. And that's why we pronounce those words with a Campania pronunciation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What I've come to realize is that this language evolved because people from different Southern regions had to communicate.
Exactly.
So a pidgin had to develop.
Exactly. So it's like you said, they had to communicate and they wanted to preserve the languages, but also they wanted to be part of America. Like, I mean, they wanted to learn English, but their main language was dialect back in the days, not even Italian. So from that, they started mixing up the two codes, the two languages, Sicilian or whatever dialects and English. And that's how you have Italian American words. Like we have a word that we actually use sometimes in Sicily, that is Shusha. And it's from Shusha, it's from Shushine, Lustra Scarpe in Italian, I would say. And in Sicilian, we sometimes say Shusha. We also have a restaurant called that way. And it comes from the Italian American culture, but it somehow reached Sicily too.
In Neapolitan, John, it's the same word. The two of all the ethnic groups that came to the United States, Italians and Hungarians had the highest rate of return. Also, there were a lot of new things that people did not ever experience in Italy, that they had to invent words in America because in Italy they didn't exist.
Yeah.
Like if you take the word bag, right?
Yeah.
They would use the word in New York, a bag, right? Became feminine because a busta, a paper bag that you put stuff in, that's a post-war thing in Italy, right?
Yeah.
So if you're leaving a Southern Italy, where people eating every other day because the poverty is so immense, they're not going to have a word for bag, a booster, right? So they're gonna take the American word and make that their word because it didn't exist. But also so many Italians went back. They took words because they were even concepts. Like someone in Italy said to me, in their town, they're somewhere in Avellino, they have the word weed, not meaning marijuana for the Z out there. They're going to think it's hot. But the concept of an herb, of a grass that was not a good grass, a grass you didn't want, the guy brought back the word weed. And somehow in the town, they start using the word weed. And they knew the guy who brought it back because he used to use it and they picked it up. And I was just amazed by that. But, you know, like Neapolitan has the word boss.
Yeah.
That's 100% a word that they brought from America back to Italy.
So my favorite thing is when Italian Americans take an American word and add like the ending in Italian.
Exactly.
Like the word push, my nonno always says pushare. It almost sounds like it should exist in Italian. Like la checca makes sense to me.
Can I ask you a question? How did we all decide that cake was a girl?
Well,
that's what fascinates a cake. And now we not be an a cake, right? I'm not a linguist, right? I just dabble in this stuff. How did we decide that cake was going to be a girl?
Because in Italian, it's a girl.
You think that's what it was?
Yeah.
Yes, because in Italian, it's la torta.
This is fascinating.
So they pick the article, the Italian article, and sometimes they cut the L. So they say a, like in dialects, a torta, a cake. So they did that. And also, as Rossella was saying, Italian Americans, since in Italian, we don't, and in dialects especially, we don't have words ending in a consonant. We add a final letter. So we create a syllable and we also shift the accent from English to Italian American words. For example, bag, bega, plural, baggy, le baggy.
That would be Sicilian, not Neapolitan.
Well, I would say Southern Italy dialects because they were all mixed back in the day. Like in literally Italy's were born once the Italian moved to America. And they were all there. Neapolitans, people from Calabria, people from Sicily. So also the original dialect changed.
Yeah, 100%.
I also want to point out that's why Italian American food is very much a mix of many different Southern Italian cuisines.
Yeah.
You know, so it's the same thing with the Italian-American language. It is a minestrone, if you will, of Southern Italian dialects mixed with English.
Exactly.
You want to hear something interesting, Federica? I love this subject. You got to write books on this. You should give your rest of your life to this topic. There's no more noble topic in the world to explore this. My friend's grandmother used to help people when they came from Italy to America to learn English and fill out paperwork. And she was born in Jersey City in 1913. So she's American born, right? And she said to me, oh, I speak five languages. English, Calabrese, Navajan, Sicilian. And the reason it amazed me was because she would translate between Italians.
Yeah.
Like Italians who couldn't understand each other. And they had such a concept. And like my grandmother would say, like my grandmother's best friends were Barese. They were upstairs from her. But they had to come up with are you familiar with Lou Monte at all? The singer from New Jersey in the 50s?
No.
Me and John have a theory. We call it Lou Monte Italian. We think that his songs are the best representation of the pidgin language that developed from Italians from all southern regions being in the room and having to communicate with each other.
I think for me that one of the things that's most interesting about this sort of Italian-American language, and Federica, perhaps you encountered it, is kind of like baga, you know, which is a word that becomes Italianized. There are other kind of made-up words, like I think, of course, most famously is bacausa, the idea for the outhouse, which in many families has remained for restroom or bathroom. My family would say they needed to get something in the bashusel or the bashument for the word basement or cellar, because they didn't have one in Italian, and it was sort of developed out of the English. And most famously to me, growing up, before I learned anything about Italian or linguistics or anything like that, in my family we called bleach piangolina, and my mother called it that my whole life. She never had any kind of question. For her, that was just the Italian word for bleach. Obviously, in reality, it wasn't. And I learned later on in life from some of the old-timers that I got to talking to that it came from the peddler who used to travel around the neighborhoods collecting your linens, or your white linens, biangolina, to wash them and to bleach them and or to sell you bleach in a bottle. So it was sort of all kind of mixed in. Did you encounter in your studies any of these other kind of unique invented words?
Well, there's a lot, actually. For example, market, there is an English word, market. And we have the word mercato in Italian, but we do use the English one. So they transformed the word market in marchetta, to go to the marchetta.
The old word, my grandmother's generation would say ustor.
Yeah. Ustor.
Ustor for the store. Who would have been the definite?
Ustor,
yeah.
Yeah. Also, as I said before, no words in Italian has with the consonant sound. So we had store. You hear the R sound. So we put the final U, storu, to adapt it to the Italian language.
You know, all of these words that are sort of loan words, there's also stuff that I grew up saying. I've always kept like a glossary in my notes on my phone just to have words that come up in my mind that I remember family members saying that I can't translate. And maybe even some of my co-hosts can't translate. And, you know, it's nice to have somebody on who may be able to solve some of these mysteries for me. And I kind of can understand the etymology of this one. In my family, whenever we wore like a sock cap in the winter with like a pom-pom on it, we called it a cupolini, right? Like a little dome. Is that something that we made up, or is that something that anybody else has encountered?
Can you repeat the word, please, in Italian-American?
Cupolini or cupolino.
With the C or the G?
We would say with the G.
Okay. That doesn't recall any Italian words in my head. It sounds like coppola, the hat.
Yeah.
But it's new for me.
Pat, where does it come from for the G and the C to be interchangeable? Because that's a lot of the words that I encounter.
I think Neapolitan, again, I'm going to get beat up by everybody today because it's a very New Jersey, Neapolitan-centric conversation. The only language I know is the New Jersey, New York language, and it's heavily influenced by Neapolitan.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, I was just thinking, like, and I don't know why, they would say a chicken for chicken. And the first consonant would be over achikana, like that would fall like the accent. But Italian has plenty of words for chicken.
Yeah.
You know, ubuccio for butcher, which would also be masculine. And gianghiera is the word in Neapolitan, and marcialaio is a word in Italian, and it's ubuccio. But, you know, I wasn't there in 1920. I don't know why certain words were picked up. Like another word, the word for sink. Now this is going to totally blow you, Federico, away. A bomba.
Okay. Yes.
A bomba.
Yes, actually, in Italian, it could be like if you say la bomba, it could be like the sink with the long tube.
That's what I think it came from. The pump in the sink, yeah. Like this.
Yes.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What about bagnarol then? What's the difference between that and a bagnarol?
Bagnarol is like the tub.
Yeah.
Like a tub.
Yeah.
A bomba is the thing you go like this with the water. But that's beyond antique. I might as well be speaking, walking around with a toga using words like that.
Yeah, but people use them though. They get passed down through generations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you say bagnarol, you're talking about a fixed in place bathtub or like a tub that you can carry?
Both.
Both.
Both, yeah.
I would say both. But it's dialect. It's dialect.
It's not a dialect, Federica. It's a language.
That's right.
It's a minority. If you were in Catalonia and they called Catalan a dialect, they would excommunicate you.
Oh, also, I think also that the same will happen in Sicily, actually.
100%. You should. Sicilian is the first written vulgar language out of all the Latin languages. Rai should be in Sicilian when you think about it. It was the first. I mean, Neapolitan is the most beautiful and the largest spoken, but out of respect for the current company, you could have had Rai. The other problem with Italian dialects is it changes from town to town.
Yeah.
You go to Poland, right? Go all across Poland. I have a lot of Polish friends. It really is the same language, right? They have small, he has an accent and they use this word, but it really is the same language. But Italian, I mean, like I can't hear it my American ear. You'll have people argue, well, in the same city, same town, there's different accents from different parts.
Yeah.
No, 1,000%. I mean, I'm from Mola di Bari, and the dialect of Mola di Bari is pretty different than the Bari Vecchia old dialect. So that couldn't be more true.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about the Barese community, too, because the language there is so different. I mean, if you look at the Southern Italian languages as linguistic families, right? You know, you have Neapolitan, and that ekes its way into Abruzzo Molise and even parts of northern Puglia, like around Foggia and stuff like that. If you look at northern Calabria and Basilicata, they're part of the Neapolitan language group. Southern Calabria towards the toe is obviously Sicula Calabrese and a bit closer to the Sicilian language. But Puglia, from kind of the Bari part and down, it really is its own language, very, very drastically different, I would say, than either the other two. So you think about all of these things coming together. And, you know, Federico, you said something really interesting. You were brought to Ellis Island to translate the works of a Sicilian stand-up comic doing sketches in America. And so now you think to yourself, you know, back in those days, you have all these people who are first language speakers of completely different versions of regional languages in America, forming this soup, this minestra, as Rosella puts it, of a language. Did you find Pugliese in any of these things? Did it eke its way into your research?
Oh, Pugliese, I won't say that. Also, the sketches I translate from Giovanni de Rosalia, this stand-up comedian, they're basically in Sicilian, but it's a very old Sicilian. So sometimes, I would say often, I have difficulties in translating it because, of course, I speak Sicilian. But it's kind of a modern Sicilian. So some words, we lost some words that were used in the past. So basically, I work with the Sicilian language. And no, yes, also because I think I wouldn't understand it. So yeah, because dialects are very different one from each other. Also from the same region. For example, I can understand people from Catania when they speak Sicilian, but sometimes they have words that we in Palermo don't use. So I have to ask them for a translation, actually.
Can you give us any examples of that off the top of your head?
First of all, we say, for example, kumpa, and they say mbare. So it's completely different.
Wow.
Yeah, like with the it starts with an M, mbare, this sound.
Wow.
And there's a word, oh my God, I don't recall it right now. There's a word that means in Palermo means fat, and over there means beautiful. Huh. Yeah.
That's a big gap if you if you're complimenting somebody or criticizing somebody. Gosh, that's
yeah.
You kind of want to thread the needle between those two. That's really fascinating. It's so different everywhere you go.
Yeah.
Tell us about the stand-up comedy, because that was a big part of Italian-American life. What were those sketches like, and what made them particularly American?
Well, the one I analyzed are from Giovanni de Rosalia. As I told you, he's a Sicilian comedian who moved to the U.S. He was born in Palermo and then moved to the U.S. And once he was there, he created his own, I don't know the word in English, like a discographic agency, maybe? I wouldn't say that.
Label, record label, yeah.
Exactly. Thank you. Record label. And he started recording sketches, basically in Sicilian, but he had words in Italian-American too. And he was very famous back in the days, let me say that.
What can you think of any of the words that he would have added that were Italian-American words?
Yeah, for example, he used the word gella to say girl.
Gella, yeah.
Yeah.
Gella friend.
What's that?
Yeah. Or nicey, to say nice, nicey.
Nice.
With a very strong Sicilian accent.
I always think like some of these like phrases, like that's a nice or that's a no good, these things, but I heard so many people say them. You know, use them truly and in no kind of parody or anything like that. And they pop into my head sometimes. Like, oftentimes when something goes wrong, the voice in the back of my head, I just hear in this Italian American accent say, that's no good. And it just stays in my head. And, you know, these things become real phrases.
Yeah.
Some in a beach.
Son in a beach is a big one. Son in a beach.
Some in a beach. Be gela, gela samina beach best. Gela samina beach best. Yeah.
Yeah.
A putana was always putana. But see, I think the beautiful thing is our beach and putana were two separate people.
Yeah.
Putana, because in Italian, putana is an umbrella word. It could be sexually putana, difficult, impossible person putana. But the Italian American language made our beach for the obvious word in English. And putana was a sexual thing.
Yeah.
They bifurcated the meaning. Gela beach. Because gela beach would be like a difficult sister-in-law. I can't get la beach. It wouldn't be that she slept around. It would be that she's an impossible person to deal with.
I don't know. Yeah. I've heard many, a difficult sister-in-law described as a putana many a times.
But that's different. Putana is saying that she also slept around.
Let's get the etymologies right here.
I think there's very set definition between a beach and a putana.
I've heard Son of Mongonia a lot, and that comes up in Lumonti, Pat. That's like a big theme in Lumonti instead of Son of a Gun, Son of Mongonia.
Yeah, I don't know where that... But Lumonti had words that... But he didn't write those words. Who was his lyricist, John?
He had a couple of them, but I think he was also his own lyricist for a lot of this stuff.
Because Lumonti mixes Calabrese and Napolitano. You really, linguistically, you got to really be sharp to... Because he'll say venue for I come.
Yeah.
Molte venia pia.
I'm coming to you.
That's why I think his family had to be like from Cosenza, because it migrates, his language migrates between Neapolitan and the Neapolitan block of Italian languages and the Sicilian block. You take Southern Calabria, which goes Sicilian, and Northern Calabria, which goes Neapolitan. He's kind of in that valley of mixed language.
Yeah.
If you follow Louis Prima is all Sicilian. I mean, there's absolutely zippo question where his linguistic background comes from.
Yeah, Louis Prima does an interesting song because a lot of this stuff is still kept in song or comedy sketches. And, you know, I'm thinking about some of the, Pat, who's the one that did their wife? Tony Goes to Italy and all that stuff. Rocco
and Mary Sampieri.
Rocco
De Russo, Mary Sampieri. They're phenomenal. So Mary Sampieri is the Irish wife. Who plays an Irish wife, who's constantly provoking her off the boat Italian husband, Tony.
Okay.
And there's this constant, oh, Tony. And then he will talk about her in Italian. and he complained about her, and she goes, Tony, what did you just say? He goes, I love you very much. And it
no, I don't know that.
There's so much great stuff out there. I mean, you think about, you know, like Pat says, Louis Prima. There's a Louis Prima song called Story About the Dog, and it's in English, and he's doing a back-and-forth story about his dog, and his dog barks at everybody, but he doesn't bark at his friend when his friend comes to the house, implying that the friend is having an extramarital affair with his wife. But he does a couple of verses of it in spoken Italian-American, Sicilian-American, whatever you want to call it. And it's so interesting to hear his take, and it's a New Orleans accent, so it sounds like somebody who wouldn't necessarily be a first language speaker of the Sicilian, but he obviously is. And these kind of things are really treasures for us, because they're like the mosquito in Amber from Jurassic Park. They're a frozen version of an old language that, like you say, no longer exists in Italy or in anywhere, really. So this is kind of treasures trapped here. And do you introduce this stuff to your friends and family back in Sicily? Have you kind of shared with them some of the stuff that you've learned about the older version of Sicilian from this?
Oh, well, yes. Like when I translate these records that are in Italian, these recordings, and I ask them, what is this? I don't get it. And sometimes they're like, oh, I don't get it either. Or maybe my dad is like, oh, yeah, I got it. And he translates that word. But it's a very, very, they're very, very old words. And yeah, it's challenging, you know?
Yeah, it certainly is. Is there anything, are there any resources? We can talk about Sicily specifically. Are there any resources in Sicily that are preserving these kind of words? Is there an institute for the Sicilian language that studies them? Is there some institution you can turn to for this kind of stuff? Or are they really just kind of, you have to ask people, older people?
Oh, yeah, you have to ask older people. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Summer is for movies on Mediaset Italia. Every Sunday, pop some popcorn and enjoy Italian cinema on Mediaset Italia at 8:35 p.m. Eastern, 5:35 p.m. Pacific. July movie highlights include Una Festa Esagerata on July 2nd, Tre Sorelle on July 9th, Tiramisu on July 16th, and Saison Rose on July 23rd. So go to the movies with Mediaset Italia this summer. Call your local television provider and ask for the channel today.
But you know what's something else? Because my mind is spinning with this. Because my father was born and raised in Ireland. And my father made a comment about when he was a kid, there was a guy who had spent all his life in Jersey City. And he went back to Ireland after 20 years. And even though he spoke with a brogue, he pronounced things with an American accent instead of an English accent. So he wouldn't say garage, he'd say garage.
Yeah.
That was considered, he was in America for 20 years. So the fact that he used American pronunciation was like a thing to show off about, because he had been in America for 20 years. And the same thing about the guy who spoke about Avellino, bringing back the word weed. He would say when the people who had come from America, right, and they usually came back with money and they could buy the house and stuff like that, they would use English words. But that was almost like a show-off type thing because they had been in America.
Yeah.
So they could speak a little bit of English. So he would say how they would, this family would throw in some English words because, oh, you don't understand, that's an American word.
Yeah.
So I think that there's also cross-pollination coming back to Italy because, and I give Italy all the credit in the world. This is what makes Italy, Italy and not France. The Italian language is being overrun by English words now.
Yeah.
It's funny you talk about going back and kind of using it as a sign of affluence. I heard a story many years ago when I was in college from somebody who came from outside of Naples, was telling me that their mother-in-law, I think, or some relation they had, who was an Italian-American who had been born in America in the 1920s, went back to Italy for the first time in, let's say, the 1980s as an older woman. And, you know, she was meeting her cousins for the first time, and it's a beautiful family reunion. And she was kind of bragging about the wealth her family had accumulated in, you know, comparatively in the United States. And she was bragging about the size of her son's house. And she said, oh, yes, yes, cinque bacaus, five back houses or bathrooms in her mind. But none of her Italian cousins knew what she was talking about. And they looked at her like she was crazy. Like, you know, what kind of word is this? But again, made up word or an invented word here, but also using it as sort of a sign of affluence, you know?
Yeah.
This reminds me of a scene that my mother actually wrote in one of her plays, because you know how she used to do the plays in different dialects. And there was this like scene of the this woman who came back from America to visit her son. And she goes, Figlio mio, l'America è una bella, grande, grande pool. My son in America has a big, big house with a pool. And she was like, come on, what's a pool? She's like, eh, it's like una vasca grande, grande, piena di acqua. And it was like, mind you, this was written in the 80s about the 60s.
But this is what people really encountered, right? A lot of these words, even if there are Italian words, they default to the American English. And I think Bacchaus is the perfect example. It's obviously a word for bathroom in Italian, right? Bagno.
Bacchaus, the specific word Bacchaus, is an interesting history to it. When New York built its tenements beginning in the 1860s and townhouses, people had grown up all through history with that you use the facilities, what we'd call the bathroom. You did your business as far away from your house or your cultivating place as possible because they didn't understand germ theory, but they understood that you didn't go to the bathroom where you ate or where you slept because that caused sickness. So when New York began to implement indoor plumbing, there was a very strong pushback against it because a lot of people did not want a bathroom, a toilet in their house because they were convinced that even though it flushed outside, that it would cause disease. It was just in everybody's head. So if you want to have a sink or you want me to have a bathtub, that's fine. But if I have to use the facilities, I'm going outside. That's why New York City yards behind the tenements were there for the outhouses. That's why the tenements have these backyards in New York. That was the original blueprint. And that's why that was referred to as backhouse, because a lot of even the Europeans had fought against the, I think up until 1912, 1913. I mean, it was issues in some places where people did not want the indoor plumbing in the house.
Yeah, it makes sense.
That's very much why New York has that back house word. I don't know if that exists. You know, I would love to hear from listeners. Is Bacchaus a word in Brooklyn? Is Bacchaus a word, you know, other places? How extensive was that word? But that was part of it. Because even if you go to Southern Italy, people have told me this. I know Vinnie Gangone had said this to me, where when he went to Teggiano in the 70s, the bathroom facility for the house was still in like a detached kitchen. But these are the interesting things. I know other people I have here messaging me, chiming in, who are part of our crew here, telling me that Brendan's telling me in Buffalo they use Bacchaus. I see Stephanie's telling us in Scranton they use Bacchaus. So I guess it was a universal word.
It must have made its way through. I mean, a lot of these things, you know, how they travel with music, with records, with stand-up comedy acts. I mean, this is how language gets disseminated. This is why when we talk about the Italy of today, the idea that, you know, when Rai comes into existence first as radio and then as TV, it standardizes so much of the way people speak, and it is sort of to the detriment of these regional languages or dialects of those regional languages and, you know, local town dialects and things like that. This is how everything gets standard. So it's interesting that Italian-American Italian develops along with the expansion of these kind of products like music and comedy and stuff like that.
There was a guy from Veneto who told a story, and I don't know where I heard it. Maybe he left his hometown before World War One. And he comes back in the 30s and his father speaks a completely different language because his father, he spoke the old dialect that was pre-World War One, and his father had a radio and a new dialect had emerged because the father used the, I guess, the proto-Rye Italian from the radio mixing with the dialect. He said, I had a hard time understanding my own father.
Wow, imagine that.
Oh, wow.
I had heard similar stories on TV too. People said that my father got a television and then everything changed.
Federica, do you find people in Italy that you encounter either academically or in business, is anybody else interested in this stuff? Do they, you know, are they curious about it? Is there any use for it in modern Italy?
Well, I think there are people interested in it, but I met none.
Wow.
That's why I created my Instagram page, because I think it's beautiful. Like, Italian-American for me is very, very fascinating. And it's weird that nobody talks about it, especially in Italy. I think it's something to be proud of.
I find in general, Italy as a nation, as individuals, is embarrassed by its emigration.
Well, yes. We go back to the first, like 1930, 1940, 50, actually, for Italians, the same ones that were in the US, it was embarrassing also to be Italian back then. because of stereotypes and because of mafia. They were linked with mafia and everything.
But I think that my father's Irish from Ireland.
Yeah.
Ireland has a concept of we're a country of 4 million people, but there's 70 to 80 million people around the world who claim Irish heritage. So Ireland exaggerates. So Ireland is like, if you have 1/10 Irish blood and your family left Ireland in 1780 and you live in Honduras, you're Irish.
Yeah.
Because Ireland bases its power on we're a small country with a huge global influence by our immigrants. Where I find Italy is the complete opposite. John and I had a guest on from Italy. It was an American living in Italy who married an Italian, and we had on the show, and they had no Italian blood. So they grew up in a very American part of America, went to Italy as a student, married an Italian, lived there, and we had them on the podcast. At the end of the episode, this person said to us, like, I was shocked, like, how, I'd say, academic your podcast was, because everyone tells me, now this person lived in the north of Italy. Everyone tells me in Italy that Italian Americans are trash because they're the trashy people that left Italy and they have a trash culture. Now, we all know that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I do find they did a study once on rye. And every time that rye in the 1990s portrayed Italian Americans on an Italian television program, it was always in a negative sense. They were always considered low class or mob. There was never a positive portrayal of an Italian American. So I think that kind of mixes in with the why do you want to study this? Or why would you care? Yeah. About this? That's what I find.
That's very sad. But often Italian Americans, from an Italian point of view, I mean, in general, I'm not specific, has a negative connotation. And that's really sad for me because I see the beautiful part of it. What Italian American did, they preserved the language, the culture. They adapted, of course, they had to. But why we have to see that in a negative way? It's a way of evolving too. I mean, for me, it's very fascinating. And nobody talks about it. And I really wanted to study something about Italian Americans at university. And I actually, when I wrote my thesis at university, my professor at the time said, you're crazy, you want to write a thesis about that. It's not a scientific language. And I said, I know that, but it's too fascinating for me. I have to write something down.
Good for you, Federica. Good for you. Bravo. Good for you. Thank you. Should bring your professor on. Yeah, good for you. we'll take him in the ring.
No, it was amazing then. He was the first time. Then it was amazing. And we worked together. And actually, he introduced me to the project manager of Ellis Island. That was him, and it was amazing. But it was like surprised. It was like nobody has ever asked me something like that. And I was like, I know, but I want to understand how the Italian American language was born and which words they use, or which words come from Italian or from English to Italian. And I wanted really to understand everything. And I'm sad that nobody talks about it. And my Instagram page was born for that, because my intention is showing how Sicilian, I say Sicilian because I'm Sicilian, but how Italian, Sicilian, and English together created these beautiful words. And for example, my Instagram page, I open with this quote. I say, my nonna said, because my nonna, my great-grandmother, she had family in New Jersey. And she went there every time she could. And sometimes she came, and when she came here, she used Italian American words. She would say broccolino to say Brooklyn.
I love that.
And scrino to say insect screen. Scrino.
Which I've never seen in Italy anyway, by the way. I don't think I've ever seen a scrino in Italy. Much as you could use
it. Yeah, no, I have it at home. Like,
you had those beaded curtains, like in Campania, that were supposed to like keep the flies out. I think it brought more in.
Yeah, my family in Sicily had, there were two kinds, three kinds, the beads. Then they were the ones with like the plastic rectangles. Remember those? They're like little tile, right? And then the ultimate one, my cousins in Palermo, and they had a summer place in Isola delle Femmine, and it was a little tiny like apartment that they used when they went to the beach and stuff.
Yeah.
And it had strings with like these like fuzz balls on them. They almost look like the fuzzy, hairy things that you put over a microphone. And those were to keep flies out, but every time you had to walk in the door, it was like schifazza because they like rubbed on you. You come off the beach had no shirt, but that was the screen, if you will.
They're aesthetic, very aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah, I don't know. The fuzzballs were kind of weird. They're
completely ineffective.
They look like little wet mice.
You know what? That two things I want to say following up on this is that I think one thing Italy never realized is that they see southern peasant uneducated people. And they never realized that so many of those people understood America much better than anyone in higher positions in Italy because they had cousins and family here and they were here on a regular basis.
Yeah.
If you go to the south of Italy, people who've been here three or four times for a family wedding or a vacation, they understand America much better than the people who come and spend 5 days in New York shopping and then go back.
Yeah.
And I think that's something Italy has never understood. And another thing is the same. I spoke to a guy who worked for Rai once. And he had a theory. He was very strongly opinionated about this, is that the reason why Italian media, Rai, portrayed Italian Americans in a negative light was after the war in the 50s, the left in Italy, and this isn't a political statement, this is a fact, this is a guy from the left in Italy became dominant in the media. And they had associated Italian Americans with having been major supporters of Mussolini, which is true. And they felt that the Mussolini regime was empowered by Americans sending back copper and money and gold, and that the Italian Americans were Southerners and fascists. And that's why they had laid the ground with this kind of trashy feeling toward Italian Americans. Because if you take media, Mussolini used to send newsreels, I guess that kind of newsreel type films, to America in English, where he would speak in English and say, to you, the children of Italian immigrants, you are still Italian. So, you know, the number one outreach we ever had from the Italian government in that sense was from Mussolini. And those bonds that Mussolini had built here, the Italian media, the Rai people, the 50s, counteracted that with the narrative of an anti-Italian Americanism.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never really thought about the impact that had on the portrayal of Italian America after the war. That's really fascinating. Something to really dig into, actually.
That's because we're a fascinating podcast, John.
See, the NPR of Italian America.
We are the NPR of Italian America.
Yeah, this is our specialty. So, Federica, before we go, tell us, you mentioned your Instagram page. It sounds like something that everybody in our audience would be very interested in. What is it? How could they find it? Tell us how to find more about you.
My Instagram page is Just a Siciliana, and I intentionally wanted to use two English words in an Italian word. So it's Just a Siciliana. I could have written Just a Sicilian Girl, but I really wanted to keep it to like Italian America. I'm not Italian American, of course, but I love it. Like, I would love it. And I want to show what Italian American language looks like, and also traditions, and what I do in my reels, in my videos, is to take an Italian American word and translating it to English and to Italian and to Sicilian, and show how it could, like, where's the influence of Sicilian language or Italian language into the word. And it's something that makes me feel good, and it's heartwarming for me because it reminds me of my nonna. And that's from her. This idea I had comes from the memory of her. So I haven't been on the page for, I think, 2 months now, but I'll be back this week because I wanted to create good content, and I worked on it in this month. And I'll be back with more Italian American language contents and Italian American culture. And I will show you also Sicilian culture and Italian culture, and try to make you feel like you're here with me in Sicily too.
That's really wonderful. I'm looking forward. I'm, as you're talking, I'm signing up to follow it and to learn more about what you're doing. And I hope there's ways we can work together and, you know, expose our audience to sharing your videos and stuff like that, and maybe even getting them out on our YouTube and things, because it's important that people see this, and I think people are going to be really fascinated by this. It's so nice to have somebody who can give you not just the etymology, but the sociology behind why you say the things you say or what they mean. And, you know, like, I was thinking about the Biangolin example before. And
yeah,
when I figured that out later in life, it was so kind of fulfilling. And then a couple of years ago, I used to go to this part of Brooklyn. It's now condemned. You're really not supposed to go, but it's a beach that's used to be a garbage dump, and you could find all these bottles and things. And I went out because there used to be Italians living there, and I said, let me see if I could find some Italian items. And I did. I found a bunch of stuff. One of the things I found was a big brown bottle. It said Aqualina. And I said, okay, this has got to be Italian. And I started to research, and it took me and Stephanie quite a while to figure out what it was. But it ended up being a company started by a Sicilian immigrant to Brooklyn in like 1900. And it was like an all-purpose cleaning product. And it was really, really very successful and popular, you know, comparative to like Lysol and Clorox and all these brands back in the day. But here it was on this bottle, this, you know, very similar use of the word. And it just felt like it completed the circle for me and put a piece in the puzzle. And I don't know, it gave more depth to the words that my family uses. So I'm really thrilled that you're out there doing this from Sicily and really for us too, because this means a lot to the community. So thank you for doing all this. And I'm looking forward to sharing it around.
Thank you.
Go out there and support Federica. You have an Italian academic who's our biggest fan and supporter, who has done so much to bring credibility to our existence as an amalgamated people, a hyphenated people.
Yeah.
So you need to go out there and to support her social media. You need to go, and what do you got to do? Like, follow, whatever people do. And then you have to post it on your Facebook and your Instagram, repost what she does, build up her numbers so people see that we appreciate what she's doing. When she posts things, send it to your relatives, send it to your friends, and get them to like.
Yeah, and please send us your thoughts too. Send us questions. Send us words that you don't know where they came from. Maybe you think you got them. I mean, we've solved some of these mysteries before, and it's always a joy for us. And if we can't figure it out, we're going to call Federica in from now on. She's going to be one of our bullpen of experts in this wonderful, as Pat says, amalgamated culture that we know and language that we know as Italian-Americans. So we hope you've enjoyed this. I know for me, I'm going to be scribbling notes from here on in for words that pop into my mind, and I hope you do the same. And send them over to us here at the Italian-American Podcast. We very much look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Da, 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 da.
If you want your life to be great, see that you're born an Italiano, and your life will be great. See that you're born an Italiano.